everyone, and welcome.
Blog Talk Radio.
Technical difficulties, Mr. Kevin Baird.
Hello, hello.
Yeah, I'm putting my guitar away.
Yep. Another day in paradise. That was an excellent opener that you had there. Is that something that you're working on that you're going to add words to later? Is it going to be an instrumental? What's going on with that?
Instrumental.
Awesome.
Just something I'm playing with.
It sounded really good.
And I've been a little under the weather and a little tired, so I kind of wasn't in the mood to sing something. So I decided to do an instrumental instead. And if he is joining us, I'm not sure if he is or not, we'd like to welcome our eye in the sky, Mr. Brett Roone-Hillman.
Good
Brett, are you there? Hello, hello. All right. Okay, sorry. For those of you joining us live, we had kind of a late start today, but we'll still get a full show in, having some technical difficulties and some other things going on. But we are here, and welcome to Main Street Universe, the show reminding you that the mysteries and possibilities of the universe are closer to Main Street than you may have ever imagined. And I don't know about you, but I can imagine a lot. And I would like to drop a few plugs right away. There will be Crystalis in Herndon, and Sticks and Stones in Fairfax, Virginia. We were just there the other day. And joining us in a future episode will be Professor Bubbles, who's an herbalist, who is one of the, I think she's one of the owners of Sticks and Stones.
Yes, she is.
And she is excellent with the gardening. She even claims, I think, to grow saffron, which is incredibly interesting because that's a very difficult plant to grow. And she claims to, at least at one point, she claimed to me to be able to grow saffron. I think she was successful doing it. As well as another future guest that has already set a date for us is Dr. Zohara Hieronymus, who she is an expert with Jewish Kabbalah mysticism. And her book is called Sanctuary of the Divine Presence, a new book that she has out. And she's written another book on Kabbalistic mysticism and Jewish mysticism. And I have an interesting book, too, as well, I've been reading to help sort of prime me up for that episode, which is about meditations in Jewish mystic tradition. So this should be a very interesting episode Dr. Zohara Hieronymus had a nationally syndicated talk show for about 10 years operating out of Baltimore. And I met her when I was just out one time on my day off, and I ran into her. She was doing a radio promo, like, at the mall, like one of those kind of things where you see a booth and you see it says, you know, it's a WCBM. And there she was at the mall doing this radio promo, and I handed her, it's a great story, really, on a personal level, because I handed her a CD, and then about a couple of days later, I get a phone call from this radio personality calling me up, telling me how much she liked my music, and was playing it on the air, and told me she would send me little emails. And this was in the early days of email, really. So it was in the early days of, you know, getting into chat or personal chat or email. And to hear myself on the radio back then, you know, it was a lot of fun, and it was interesting to meet her. And she's a very bright woman, and has a lot of information packed into her head. She was so well read, it was amazing. But I'd like to get to the topic and to the show. And I hear a little voice. What was that?
That's a crow that's outside, but we do have people in the room who are saying hello.
Oh, and hello to all of them. Let's take a look. I'm away from the computer, but let's take a look. Looks like Marcy is here. Ah, okay, hello, Marcy, Veronica, Reverend Phoenix, and some familiar names here. I was going to say faces, but I can't really see them right now, so maybe that would be...
In spirit, I got them.
In spirit, I see their faces. We will go on today to today's topic. In today's topic, we're going to be talking about forbidden technology. As I kept researching this, and honestly, I was doing it very late last night and just kept going, you know, you kind of get hooked onto something. It became more singular as I was doing it. So this will be a multiple series. I want to do like a series of shows about alternative health and forbidden technology. So we'll start off with today's story, which is about Dr. Wilhelm Reich and the Orgone Accumulator. And it has also sort of a spiritual tie and everything else. We'll get there, but let's just start off. In 1897, in Galicia, the easternmost part of the Austrian-Hungarian Empire, now called the Ukraine, Dr. Wilhelm Reich was born. He was largely homeschooled by tutors. In 1914, being born in privilege, and then in 1914, World War I broke out. The Russians invaded, and Wilhelm barely escaped being a hostage. He then went on to some more schooling, and in the 1930s, Wilhelm discovered a form of energy. He had confirmation of this energy in the human body during his experiments. He successfully tested for this energy as well in the atmosphere. He developed a system of harnessing it. And I'll get to this later. Get back to his bio a little bit. Wilhelm Reich became an actual student during his college days and studied with Sigmund Freud. His interest with Freud was his early interest in this, what he thought was this other form of energy that lived within the human body. And Freud called this the libido. Now, when Freud mentions libido or sexual energy, he at first actually does state it as a real form of energy to be used for treatments and to be used for various things to help the human experience. Later on, Freud and some of his followers reduce the idea of libido to being that of just sort of a physiological thought or an idea. But at first, Freud thought of it as like we sort of in the mystical or metaphysical world think of it as like a real form of energy to throw around. So disagreements over how to view this sex energy, as well as cultural or social standards and how to view it, eventually led to the breakup of the partnership of Dr. Sigmund Freud and his very bright student, Dr. Wilhelm Reich, they sort of parted ways. In 1935, at the University of Oslo, Dr. Wilhelm Reich began a series of experiments to prove the existence of this physical, biological energy and how it is expressed through our emotions. Dr. Reich was able to pick up an energy charge from the skin's surface based on pleasure and anxiety. He concluded from his laboratory experiments that anxiety brings energy towards the organs, like one might say stress, you know, bringing things in and binding it up. And this is very much what they were studying scientifically in a laboratory, was this idea of how we do in mystical traditions of grounding and all of this, this buildup of energy. They were studying this in a laboratory and on the skin surface. And that pleasure, if you feel pleasure, it's sending energy out. So we have some as within, so without. So he would put these sensors onto the test subject's skin, and if the energy was going outward for pleasure, then he would say, okay, well, that there was his confirmation, there was his proof of what he was saying, and then inward for anxiety. Dr. Wilhelm Reich then went on to study other forms of life to see if these forms of life give off a similar charge and in a similar way. He did notice that when these other forms of life, including things like charcoal, blades of grass, pieces of food, etc., 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 when they break down, they disintegrate. They disintegrate, and on a microscopic level, the technology they had at the time to investigate them, into pulsating blue particles, and he referred to them as bions. Studying these bions, he noticed that there was movement and energy still. Now, these are things that people consider to be dead. So this is something that's a living particle, almost back to last week's conversation. And then it was dead, it was decaying, it was dying, it was disintegrating, but it had movement, and it had life, and it had energy within it. And so again, energy after life. Some of these bions glowed with a strong, radiant field around them. He referred to this field as orgone energy. He released this study, and when he did, the country he lived in at the time was Norway. The Norwegian press was absolutely brutal towards him for about a year. He then, as a response to this brutal press, and also as a response to knowing that the Second World War was coming, this was the time frame we're talking about, he decided to leave and put his sights towards the United States of America. Dr. Wilhelm Reich, unlike some of his other scientist friends there who were criticizing him, was very much opposed to the Nazi Party rising to power in Germany. And he saw the ugliness coming, and he left, and he moved to New York in the United States of America. Eventually, he found his way to buying a farm in Maine. The farm in Maine was known as Organon. He was naming it after the form of energy that he discovered.
So is that O-R or A-R?
Yeah, O-R-G-O.
So it sounds like you're saying argon as
orgo, as in organic.
Oh, I see.
And as in orgasm, even though it's a G-rated
show. An organ as well.
Yeah, it's like an organ, like a bodily organ.
I find it interesting you were talking about the sensory stuff, where if someone's feeling joy, they emanate outward, and then if they're feeling negativity or anxiety, they draw within. That puts me in the mind of the cuttlefish that has external chromophores that sort of change as their mood changes, as well as the chameleon as well. I find that very interesting.
Yes, and I mean, I can only say according to the studies he did, there's a place you can go on YouTube. A great one was called A Man's Right to Know. If you go to YouTube and type in Wilhelm Reich and A Man's Right to Know,
If somebody can Google that in the room and just post a link.
Sure. Yeah. It's a great documentary about him. There's quite a few other ones that were done. Like
History One More Time Channel. On that. What was it called?
Man's Right to Know.
Man's Right to Know. There might be some YouTube even stuff out there.
Yeah, and there's quite a few of them. I mean, my research into this issue definitely took me in directions that were unexpected, as often happens when I research something for the show. I was just sitting there watching it going, what?
And it's a great thing about links.
Yes. Anyway, I'll go on. When he moved to America, he did make it to America. So he's already been through a lot. He's learned all this stuff, discovered a weird form of energy, been a student, and then came to America after being in World War I for a while. So while he was in Maine, when he purchased his property, his Organon farm in Maine, he built a student's laboratory. He built also an observatory and a library, observation decks. All of this was paid for from his own income and voluntary contributions. There is evidence of him turning a needle during these experiments, and I love this one. You got to see this one in the documentary. Using a machine where he places the palm of his hand onto this terminal, and it's just the energy from the palm of his hand. The needle turns, and I think it's fascinating. It's like the palm chakra, when you warm up the palm chakras, and he was experimenting basically with magical energy. He continued his research into orgone energy, and as his time progressed in America, he started really having some successes, and of course with that came some of the criticisms. The FDA began to investigate him. You see, Wilhelm Reich, he developed a device known as the orgone accumulator. This device was a box with many layers. The layers consist of iron and steel, and the other layers between the iron and steel contained organic or non-metallic layers, such as cotton, wool, or plastic. These materials were layered in, and the metallic layer was the very much had to be the interior one. So the one right in the middle had to be a metallic one. And again, this box was known as the orgone accumulator. He created this box and used it, a small version of it, to treat cancer-ridden mice. From his successes, he then went on to create one for humans. He created this big box where a human being could sit in it for cancer treatment in a gigantic orgone accumulator. The people who participated in the cancer treatments did show marked improvement. They showed less pain, healthier blood conditions, weight gain, and elimination of tumors. Some of them, their tumors completely disappeared. However, these terminal patients did still die. It's important to note as well that they were all very tragic terminal patients that he took on, and he charged absolutely not a penny for them to.
But the fact that there was some change is amazing.
Yes, and the fact that they were living a more pleasant life on their way out. You know, they were improving and gaining weight and looked better.
Right,
and
right.
Everything, your skin tone better and gaining weight and all those things that are difficult when you have cancer.
We just posted a link to the chat room, and Altoid copied the link from the chat room out to the Main Street Universe show group page on Facebook also. So
awesome.
If you're not a member of that group, that's a place to keep up with some of the links that we talk about here in the show.
Yes, we do have a Main Street Universe Facebook discussion page now. It's a group page.
Yeah.
And
so you're talking about the patients did die from the cancer.
They did, but their conditions were treated better. So Dr. Wilhelm Reich then concluded that cancer is more than the tumor, which people are talking a lot about nowadays. is the tumor is merely a local manifestation of a greater full mind-body-spirit disorder.
I read in Omni magazine about 40 years ago, back when I was a kid, where this lady had gotten cancer or received cancer or picked up cancer, however we want to look at the source, and that she was given some medication to help her with her cancer. And what she did was that she imagined, she used creative visualization to imagine this inoculation that she was given as great white sharks, and that they were swimming through her body that was an ocean looking for gray fish. And the gray fish were the cancer cells, and that somehow she got healed. And that's how she made her way as an article into a column on Omni. But that was my first introduction to where the mind has a lot of power over the things that afflict it.
Right, and that's part of what our series, this is part one of our series, about alternative technology, forbidden science, is talking about. I'm saying it with a bit of a disclaimer. I'm saying I'll put some things out there, make your own decisions based on that. I am just saying here is some alternative science to look at, and there are miracles out there in both the faith-based healing, like Kevin was saying, visualization and all of that, as well as great herbal treatments, diets and devices, great wacky devices that are out there. And, you know, use an open mind and understand that some of these things are genuinely documented and are genuine points in human history as well. As you'll see later, as I go on further with this point about Wilhelm Reich in the monologue. And anyway, so he thought of cancer as a general energy imbalance. He then took his research to another level. He began to build a simple device, really based on the same principles he was using for his healing and cancer treatment. He then went on to build a device to manipulate the weather. This device was called a cloudbuster. If anybody remembers, if they're old enough, in the 1980s, the amazingly beautiful angelic singer Kate Bush did a song about this, and it was Donald Sutherland, I think, was playing the part of Dr. Wilhelm Reich in the video. And this device was a series of pipes attached to some cables, very simple. And the cables were immersed in some water, and the pipes were long pipes pointed towards the sky. It said that the water attracts what he called orgone or ambient energy. And so it would go through the pipes, into the wires, into the water, and then he could manipulate the device in a certain way to make or to reduce clouds, was his claim. Again, he said water strongly attracts orgone energy. When, from the Cherokee Nation, Larry Rush was on our show, if you remember way back, it's been a while now, but he was talking about how when he's out in the rain, he feels like that the rain is alive. And I thought that was interesting because, to me, that fits the idea of the water being a living thing and having life and having energy. Now, Wilhelm Reich was successful, and it was written up in newspapers in Maine during the time, to produce rain. In fact, he did so for a group of blueberry farmers in Maine, and I personally love blueberries. Again, this success was published in the local newspapers, and he did it for free, I think. I believe he did it for free. After his success with this and some of his other inventions, again, what happens? The FDA starts to check in on him. And now, as he became more and more successful, as these things begin to roll and you get the ball rolling and you get great positive stuff rolling, his critics start to come out, which is understandable. They claimed that his theories were false and that orgone energy didn't actually exist. And it was an official legal claim. The things I am saying are not just speculation. What actually happened were actually documented cases of people having their conditions at least better. He wasn't able to save these cancer patients. He was actually able to produce rain. That is documented, and it's also documented that someone just decided to complain about him, and then the FDA and the federal government decided to go on a full-on attack. And they sent him a court order to appear in court. Now think of this, Kevin. To appear in court to prove a scientific theory. You don't prove scientific theory in courtrooms. That is not the place to prove scientific theory. And so he refused to go to court. So, I mean, it sounds like witch trials almost, really. They're trying to talk about something either belief-based or scientifically-based in a court of law. The judge had a name. His name is John Clifford. Dr. Wilhelm Reich wrote a letter to Jonathan Clifford. Here is a quote from the letter. Quote, "Scientific matters can only be clarified by prolonged, bona fide, faithful observations in friendly exchange of opinion and never by litigation. I therefore submit in the name of truth and justice, I shall never appear in court." And I, for one, completely agree with Dr. Reich that that is not where you decide a scientific matter is in a court of law.
Now, lawyer looking to make money maybe said that.
Oh, yes. So his refusal letter was not accepted in any sort of polite or functional way for him, and a default injunction by the court was issued. So the court then decided to act. Perhaps it would have been better for him to show up, but the point was, here's someone that has harmed no one, who saved a blueberry crop. Why has he got to be in court? All because someone complained to the government that his orgone energy theory is false. It's really, you have to think of the time, folks. We're talking somewhere around the 50s, you know, nuclear scare and all of this kind of, you know, atom bomb era of duck and cover. Like,
it definitely sounds like witch trial.
The whole get under, you know. It may sound silly to us, but that's still contempt of court.
Mm-hmm. It's true. You're right about that. It is. You're right about that, Brett. You can't just write a letter and say you're not showing up. Don't try this at home. This is in the 1950s.
It was worse, though, because of the fact he was from a European country and he actually did have some Marxist philosophies.
Right. So you're right about that.
That alone, you know, could have put him on the theoretical blacklist.
And you're right about that, but in truth, he was just a person surviving within that Marxist society. In truth, he believed in a free, open exchange, and all of his work was privately funded. He was not socialistically, I guess, you know, not trying to get too political, but funded in any way. He did not receive one government grant or anything. He was on the side of the socialist movement as far as things like sexual liberation and certain social issues, not necessarily agreeing with every side of the socialist movement.
Right,
but as far as workers' rights and certain social issues, he was all there, if you know what I mean.
You knew how the government operated then. You have one piece of the pie, you're completely in. It didn't matter. It was all or nothing in the 50s.
Right, sure. Oh no, I'm of an understanding of that point exactly. And my parents are of that generation, and they have that same sort of. They still have that way of viewing the world, and if they're listening, hello. But they have that way of viewing the world that's very absolutist. You're for or against. You know, Jesus was an American, and all that. That's just how, you know. I mean,
20-gallon hat.
I'm joking a little bit, but I don't know if I'm that far off, really.
Jesus might have been an American. Was he a Christian? I've always wondered about that.
Exactly. But, yeah, that time period in Brett's right, it was very much, you know, it was you're with us or you're against us. I mean, and him being a foreigner did not help his case. But to go on with the court order, there was a federal court order made, and it stated that all of Dr. Wilhelm Reich's orgone energy accumulators be destroyed, as well as any remaining parts or any instructions on how to use it.
I just posted a link to the Cloudbuster description in Wikipedia in the on the wall.
Oh, cool. And the court order even included a banning of books that were written by Dr. Wilhelm Reich. So here's a court order, and I love these kind of, I mean, love in a strange way, I mean, in a fascination way, these strange things, you know. It's like, here's a guy that has basically hurt no one. He made it rain a couple of times, helped some cancer patients, does a court order, and destroy all of his life's work. It's absolutely, had no idea that the story was going to take me in this direction when I first started researching.
But if you look at the image on the link, it shows someone who has some kind of contraption that looks like
That's an air defense. Yeah.
You know, missile launcher or something like that.
But it's basically a bunch of metallic, I think, EMT pipes.
Right.
With some cables attached to the back of them going into a pond of water to help make it rain.
Yeah. Future Buster Crab or Buster Keaton kind of technology. Very cool.
Yeah. And I've always been fascinated with some of the inventors from that time period. And we mentioned some other intellectuals from that time period as well. And anyway, but while this was all happening, Dr. Reich then went to Arizona for a while. It's very dry out there, so he had some interests there, some contacts wondering if he could get some rain generated in Arizona. While he was in Arizona, one of his students, Dr. Michael Silvert, relocated during the injunction, during the federal injunction, relocated some of the orgone accumulators and some of the literature. This was considered a direct violation of the injunction, and they were charged with criminal contempt of court. And this was, so imagine now, after this injunction, you're just going to, you know, continue your work. It's what you do with your life. He goes to Arizona. While he's gone, one of his students, not that he begrudged the student for doing it, moves some of your technology around and is charged with this crime. And now he is charged with the crime as well because his technology was not supposed to be moved across state lines, part of the injunction. So in 1956, both of these brilliant men were found guilty in a court of law. Dr. Wilhelm Reich, a man whose mission and action in life was focused on helping all human beings, he did not charge any money for his cancer treatment experiments. He wanted people to access free energy, was sentenced to 2 years in jail for violating a court injunction for equipment moving across state lines that he was not even aware of happening while he was in Arizona. While Dr. Wilhelm Reich was locked up, and he was about 60 years old, the sentence was 2 years, by the way, the federal government then carried out a book burning of all of his books while he was incarcerated. They destroyed whatever they could find. They destroyed his equipment, his inventions, his books. In a tragic act of what I consider to be an American failure, tons of Dr. Wilhelm Reich's books were gathered, collected, and burned in garbage incinerators in New York City. And some people consider this to be one of the greatest acts of censorship that ever occurred in our country.
So they are fearful that some truth that they had known up to that point was going to be undermined by this new technology, and they wanted to abolish it.
Yeah, fear, of course, that we discussed many times on the show is a factor. And
fear is also a mind killer.
And so this amazing human being, instead of being awarded for his service to humanity, or at least his attempt, I mean, nobody's perfect, but he was researching and attempting things, this gentleman should have been given some sort of award. Instead, he dies in jail while his books and his inventions are being destroyed. while he's rotting away and dying in a cell. So definitely that turn to the story did surprise me when I first looked up the weather-changing guy. And very sad. Now, it's also not meant to dwell on the sadness because he did live an amazingly full and rich life. I mean, he lived an entire life pursuing his passion before he was finally sentenced and died. He you know, had a wife he was very passionate about. He had a family. He lived for his inventions. He lived for his passions, his dreams. He had the farm with the school and the laboratory and the observatory. So he did live a full life. So one should not, while reading the story, feel sad for how he died. But remember that he did live the interesting life that he desired. And when you do that, you will sometimes draw that negativity, unfortunately, because the forces in the world don't always want you to be that interesting, I think. And they want to keep a certain sense, without sounding preachy or political. I wanted to be careful to not sound negative or conspiratorial. I don't spend time with conspiracy theory. This is a conspiracy theory. It's just something that happened.
And, oh, it was the 50s. It's all about conspiracies.
Yeah, right. But he did live a rich and amazing life before that tragic way of dying. And that's how he should be remembered. Regardless of whether or not his technology was 100% true, but it was certainly something interesting, and there's it's cool to watch the videos on the Man's Right to Know YouTube video that I mentioned is, and he's putting his palm on the terminal and the needle is spinning based just on the energy, ambient energy coming from his body. Nikola Tesla, it is said, invented a car that ran off of ambient energy. I actually met a person once who claimed to have witnessed, it was a very old gentleman who claimed to witness a test run of this car. Again, I don't know if it's 100% true. I'm just saying that I met somebody that claimed to have witnessed this test run of an ambient energy car. They're saying that this energy is all around us and it permeates us, it goes through us, very much like the Force in Star Wars or the magical psychic energies that we believe in as metaphysical practitioners, pagans, and what Kevin does for a living, basically. Which reminds me, I'm going to do a plug there.
All right, thank you.
Which is Kevin Baird, psychic medium, intuitive consultant, and he can be reached at www.templeofgaia.com, as well as reading physically in person at the Stones. Stores Sticks and Stones and Crystalis in Herndon, Virginia.
And on Thursdays, I'm now at the Weems Bot Museum in Dumfries as resident psychic and giving metaphysical tours there.
Ghost tours.
Yep. Second most haunted facility in Virginia, they say.
Awesome. Which reminds me, a future guest who has agreed to be on the show is an author named Thomas Howell. And Thomas Howell wrote a book about mysterious and unusual things in Virginia, and it's called Mysterious Virginia. So one thing I found very entertaining and funny was Thomas Howell had this book that's like Unusual Virginia, you know, one of those fun kind of coffee table books, and you pick up and there's wacky, eccentric people and unusual things that go on and UFO stories and all of this. And one of the things that's in Unusual Virginia is the tradition that I am a member of recently, which is on Re-Octfane, the ADF. So I just happened to stumble across that. So I'm like, oh, the tradition I'm part of is considered Unusual Virginia. The ADF, the Druid organization that I'm also a member of, makes his book of unusual things that happen in Virginia sometimes, so I thought that was kind of fun. But anyway, we're talking about unusual technologies, forbidden technologies, and alternative healing as well in general. And the idea of energy, an ambient energy that surrounds the body, being tested scientifically, and even being tested to surround dead things, which was part of actually Wilhelm Reich's original scientific discovery of orgone energy, was it was with particles of disintegrating matter. That was, you know, blades of grass or charcoal or food stuffs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And they still had movement, and they still had a glow, and they still had activity going on, which goes on a little bit to what I said about life after death last week. And right now what I'm going to do is take a little break and give Kevin Baird his moment in the sun here.
Yeah, for the Horizon Oracle, today's cards I've drawn were the Horizon, which is the 120 card, and then the 101 card, which is the Spirit Audience. And the Spirit Audience is basically a lot of people who are not connected to bodies but are very interested in what's going on around us. And in meditation today, I was thinking about that and found out that that sort of Spirit Audience is sort of like the chi that's in spaces, whether it's the chi of where you live or how your furniture is arranged influences the chi. It's connected to that feng shui stuff, mm-hmm. that you organize your furniture for prosperity, that kind of thing. I think feng shui is starting to fade away, but chi will live forever. But basically, working with the Horizons card and the Spirit Audience card, it's really telling you that you should step with faith that fate, because I was having trouble wording that today as I was posting about it, have faith that fate is comfortable with this thing that you're considering proceeding into doing. And that you can, like, as an example, if you want to do a reading for yourself, for you guys who have cards ready, I'm still working on the book, for you guys who want to do a reading for yourself for any kind of cards or any kind of questions in the future, you draw one card or you come up with your question, and then you go through the deck looking for the image that looks closest to what it is that you're trying to realize in your life in that moment, that situation, that day, that week, that kind of stuff, job, career, relationship, what have you. And then you shuffle the deck, and then you pick from the top the next card, and that's what fate has to say about that combination. So what you're doing is you're allowing yourself to have power over the situation, which is what free will is, and then you get a response from fate telling you what their opinion of the situation is. And if you can find or think up sort of like a compromise between the two, then your progress for what you want to see happen is likely to happen. And Daniel was working on something to where he wanted to manifest something in his life, and it sort of came to pass, but it was not exactly what he was looking for, but it did sort of happen. I don't know if you want to talk about
it. But it did work. No, yeah. It's okay to talk about it, I guess. Yes, it was actually a manifestation of a automobile.
Right.
And I did attract one to my wife, because imagine casting the spell, and I won't talk about this too long for right now, but and then doing, it was a combination of both old school and new. I did like a kind of a traditional spell casting and all that. And then I did everyday law of attraction stuff as well, and visualizations. And I woke up one afternoon morning. I worked late shift, so I work late at night. And I woke up, and someone was at the door saying, we're here to drop off the car. So that was a very unusual experience. And to me, too much to be coincidence. That's a very specific and weird coincidence
exactly.
to happen.
Almost verbatim yeah. what you asked for.
And it was a hybrid.
Also,
go ahead.
I was going to say that is a huge experience, and it's something to keep in mind when you go into your future work.
Yes.
Also, I recently received a deck from you, Kevin, and Daniel, and I've actually been thinking on my own spread with it called Walking Down the Road, because a lot of your cards seem to have roads.
Yeah.
Ah, cool. I like that.
Yep. Yep, that's so good. We'll
see how that turns out.
Yep, and that's good. I was torn as to like what I should title it. So the actual title of the deck, you know, I thought about it one time calling it Windows. You know, the Horizon or the Windows Oracle or something like that. But since Windows is so heavily used in other areas, I decided to not.
But I like Brett's idea. I like Brett's idea of the spread. He said he was inventing a spread called Walking Down the Road, so that's actually kind of cool because you do have a lot of roads.
And they're like stones that are on the path, really. You have 111.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
And it lines up numerically, right, when you have your list there.
Mm-hmm.
What was the numerical numerology lineup for your deck?
Yeah, in the index, I have the 111, you know, like names and titles for how you can look up where the card is talked about in the book, but it's three columns of 37 names for
and
the card.
And 7 3 is 10, so each one's
right.
just like completion.
Yeah.
Know, sort of our numerological.
Yeah, and three columns.
Contemplation.
You know, is the divination, the divinity, so it seemed like a perfect number.
Yeah, it seemed like it was done at that point.
Yeah.
Because I remember you doing it. I think I was there at the shop, and you were at Six and Stones, mm-hmm. and you were sitting there, and you were talking to Professor Bubbles, who will be a future guest.
Yes.
A great herbalist, and she's a head of a coven, I believe, around here, right? The Sisters of the Tree?
I think that's right.
Sisters of the Tree, I think it's called.
So.
And,
Goddess Tree, maybe?
That might be it, Sisters of the Goddess Tree. And I think it's an all-female coven. And but she's very, very skilled with herbalism, and she'll be a future guest. And I remember you sitting at the shop discussing it with her, and she was like, "I think it's done." You know,
she walks her talk.
Yes, she's very, very wise, eccentric, but like a lot of
like all of it,
like a lot of bright people.
Mm-hmm.
She's sort of wacky and eccentric, and definitely the name Bubbles fits. She's a very lively and bubbly human being, and very
right.
Laughs a lot and giggles a lot and has a great program at her store. I definitely like some of the classes there that I've attended and the drum circles and all that sort of thing. But back to our topic, we were discussing alternative health, alternative healing. I will discuss and mention certain things that have worked definitely for me. So when people start talking about in the world of, and I'm just using the word alternative healing, you can call it what you want, I have used some things very much in success. A couple I can mention, one of them was, it was a product with mostly lavender oil when I had a really bad chemical burn. I used to be an electrician and worked in some industrial environments, and I had a terrible chemical burn that literally was all up and down both my arms. The doctor gave me something that basically did nothing, and then I went and got something with some lavender oil, and it had a couple other ingredients, and within like 2 days it was gone after suffering from this thing for like a week or two.
Wow.
I think the closer you get to natural sources, the better some of these natural cures are. And according, of course, to your own individual biology and what's going to work for you might not work for another person, but that one definitely worked. The lavender.
Always consult your doctor first.
Yes. I'm not your doctor here on Main Street Universe. I'm a talk show host.
And, yes, on all things herbal, please consult the doctor. I've actually read some supposedly reputable books that have done things that are outright toxic.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one thing is to always go in the direction of the closer you are to the natural source, the better off you are. I mean, how harmful is it going to be, say, to try to use cloves to kill parasites? That's not really going to hurt most people, you know. But in the old days, clove oil was a parasite treatment, and they used to use it for animals. One thing they would say was, if your animal was sick, if you took like your dog or your even a cow or something like that to an old farmer that also had some veterinarian skills, they would say, let's see if it's we can get rid of these parasites. So treating of parasites is another thing that's been coming up a lot in the alternative health world now. That used to be an old thing. Another one is alkalinity versus acidity in your diet. And again, some people claim, and I'm just saying it's a claim, that in an alkaline state, that cancer cannot even exist. That's what the claim is for the alkalinity folks. Again, I'm not saying if it's true or not. I think it's interesting, and I think you should do your own research on it. One thing I can say is one food that's considered to promote an alkaline state is, and it's not the best tasting thing in the world, but is wheatgrass juice. So that's become a popular thing for people. There's a juice store down the street. I occasionally get a glass of wheatgrass juice there. And this is something with a powerful alkaline quality to it. And the way that works is how it digests. So something can feel acidic but might still have an acidic quality, like certain citrus fruits, et cetera, et cetera. But so there are many different ways to look at the alternative health world. I think the best way to experiment with it is to stay as natural as you possibly can, I guess is my point. I think the real snake oil, like Brett is talking about, when he mentioned some toxic things, comes with these all-in-one products. Like you got this powder that supposedly can do like, 4,000 things. These things have been processed so far away from their natural
Gold bomb,
source.
Maybe.
Yeah, they've been just so heavily processed, and some of them might even have controversial ingredients to the degree that they're no longer a natural product. And to me, the things that do that can tend to be the snake oil and the things not to trust. So, like Brett said, check your doctor, check your allergies if you're allergic to anything, and stay as close to your natural source.
Also, see how up to date your doctor is. Do check in, that little posting on the wall. Make sure he's up to date.
Especially
there are actually some doctors that still do leeches, apparently, that I have just learned. It's like, okay. That's a little bit out there. They used to do that, and, well, we don't anymore for a very important reason. So just
right.
That was an extreme example, but make sure your doctor is up to date.
Oh, absolutely. And the natural doctors that you visit, there's one that actually might be a guest. He's a local Chinese medicine practitioner. We're all busy. It's hard to do the research. But, again, I think when things are closer to their natural source and closer to something that just, kind of seems and feels natural and real, then experimenting with that, which I'm going to do, I'm going to do some acupuncture, and I'm as well experimenting with some of the machines, which I have. I have used myself as a guinea pig for a machine that was called a MagnaZap, and I was in this place. It's a store called Healthway, and they were demonstrating this machine. She asked me to come along and be one of the guinea pigs for it. I didn't come there with a condition or an infection to cure, so I just went there and used the machine. And it basically, I will admit, it felt odd when I was done with it. You're on it for about, I guess, about 20 minutes, and you're holding these two terminals that are sending electromagnetic impulses into your body, and the claim is that they're killing parasites and that they're killing infections. Now, there was no harm coming from using this machine, so whether it actually killed infections or parasites, I'm not sure. It was certainly not a harmful or unpleasant experience. I did feel extremely ungrounded when the experience was done. Like, I felt kind of like I was in a long meditation. Of course, I was sitting there for about 15, 20 minutes, and I felt very much like I had to sort of ground it, and I did do, after the fact, a grounding ritual, if you want to call it that, not ritual, but exercise, and as well as when I definitely felt like I had to go get something to eat. Sort of salty things help with that, with sort of grounding you again, or coffee, and there's some other things. And it was an interesting experience. I had never used a machine like that, and some of them cost as much as like $8,000, so I don't know if I'd spend $8,000 for something like that. The one that I was using particularly that day cost about $500. So this one was a slightly lower end one. But that is something we'll get into in part two or three of our...
What was it called again?
This one was just called Magna Zap. That's exactly... It was by Dr. Overman. So go ahead and if you want to type in Dr. Overman or look that one up. There's this guy who does these machines and as well as promoting various supplements and diet changes. Dr. Oz is another one people know of. And he's become fairly popular, Dr. Overman. So I tried it. Again, I don't know what it worked on or if it didn't. It wasn't necessarily unpleasant. And I felt very dizzy. Basically, I just felt very dizzy when I was done with this. And I think now would be a good time to go and look to the sky for our answers. Our eye in the sky, Mr. Brett Hillman.
All right, I am running with my heart. The big thing to note today is that Mercury is out of retrograde.
Ooh, finally.
Now, we are still in the post-retrograde stage, so it's slowly starting to move back to its normal speed. And keeps in mind that that it will be about a week before we kind of get back into the normal swing of things when it comes to communication. But we're glad it's over, and it will. We don't have to worry about that for a couple more months to come back when it comes back, because it happens three times a year. Another thing to note is that yesterday Venus moved into Gemini. And this is a good time for, as far as relationships goes, to talk. That dreaded word, we need to talk, a good time during this thing. Because you can get both sides of a lot of issues out there. And while Mercury is changing back, it's also in Pisces right now. So it's also communication itself is still going to be very dreamy. So you got to make sure to stay kind of grounded in the situation and the talk. Because both sides of an issue need to come out. Even if it's just a minor thing, it can grow to a larger thing in this time. The moon is in Virgo, which will help in that kind of grounding sensation. We were talking about grounding a few minutes ago. Mm-hmm. Virgo is very good at grounding. That is what it does.
Right.
And so the moon, your emotions will be grounded. It's really helpful in that. Neptune also moves into Pisces. So we'll also have a couple of things affected there when it comes to that kind of dreamy state. It might make it a little harder for us to connect as individuals, however, like together. It really will kind of work against us when it comes to trying to make meaningful connections to others. My 101 segment today moves into the ascendant sign or the rising sign, and that's a really good name for it because that's really what it tends to talk about. What it is the sign that is really just coming over the horizon at the moment of your birth, and it does change from minute to minute or hour to hour. Right now, for example, in Fairfax, Virginia, at this moment, if you were born right now, your ascendant sign would be Cancer.
Mm.
And how the ascendant sign works is that is really your first instinct, your first action when it comes to something. It could be when you meet somebody new. It could be the new start to a new situation. Cancer, for example, Cancer signs like to move quickly to that place of familiarity. They like to talk with old friends. They are the people that will go to their buddies and say, hey, I want to be a sounding board. I need...
Mm-hmm.
They usually retreat as well when it comes to when the first sign of criticism. Mm-hmm. In this thing, it's when you feel threatened, you become overly sensitive to it. But the ascendant sign, to kind of re-instigate, it is that first response. It's that gut instinct. It's not your final work. Like the moon will do the overall working, how you deal with everything else. The rising sign is that first instinct.
Okay.
Before I close, do you have any questions?
So Mercury is out of retrograde, right? So we're done with that for a little while, and a lot of things happened during that time that are.
So Neptune being where it is means that we're going to have trouble communicating. What should we do while we're waiting for the transition?
Well, it's going to be for a little bit. It's just trying to make sure to let yourself know that you are dealing with other people. Remember your...
So over-explain maybe because people wouldn't get it right the first time if we did a short...
I wouldn't say over-explain because it's not necessarily communication. What it is, it's just getting harder to connect to others. You know that whole, I click with someone or I don't click with someone? It might be harder before you reach that point.
I see. Mm-hmm. So the ether between all of us is going to be a little more dense, I would say.
That's a good way to describe it.
Okay.
It's just that kind of spiritual connection that might be a little iffy.
Yeah. And just focus on the ether bunny then, I guess. Because it's Easter.
We do have a symbol in Snare here.
Exactly, yeah.
Yes. And, well, I guess that will close my astrology report for this week. And next week, I am not exactly sure what I will do for the 101 segment. I'm not sure if I'm going to continue by going down the planets or if I will begin talking about the various houses. So we have multiple ways this can go, or possibly I can connect them together, because the houses are generally ruled by the planet, so I might be able to work them both together.
All right.
Very cool.
We'll see what develops. And also, there is something else going on in the cosmos, and that is Kevin Baird, our co-host here, turning 51.
Yep, I'm over the hump on Sunday.
You are more than a half century old, my friend.
Half centurion.
You're a half centurion.
0.5 centurion. Thank you.
And that makes you an Aries, right?
Yeah.
That's right, I think. I remember that. And so Sunday is your birthday.
Yes.
51. And... Yeah. Do you feel younger than you did like 5 years ago or older?
It's not really an age thing. I think that I feel less burdened. Like all the things that I felt like I needed to do the first part of my life, I can really give a 1, 2, 3, 4 right now. So it's really just like age has helped me stop dragging or carrying around the things that I had been.
Your ability to let go.
Yeah.
And to not think that everything's a big, gigantic, great big deal, you know. Oh, my God, no.
Yeah.
I've gotten more like that, too. Like things, unfortunately, a little bit too much this morning, perhaps, but the ability to let go and not worry so much comes to you, I think. Hopefully, with age. There used to be a really funny beer commercial, and I forget the beer, but it would say, you know, sometimes they say with age comes wisdom, but sometimes age just shows up all by itself, and I just thought that was a great, funny commercial.
That's good.
And sometimes it's true. Some folks don't learn. And there's plenty of things I don't learn.
I'll go back a little bit. It seems that one of our listeners, Reverend Phoenix, will also be having a birthday on
Sunday.
Oh, okay. And she will be reaching that near 50. She will be reaching 50, so very similar age range there.
Another half centurion.
We have a couple of our Aries.
I actually get along very well with Aries folks. I usually have. There's something about them. They're just kind of driven, and they just kind of dot, 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 dot. There's something they like. They usually love life. Usually they're the type of people. They can sometimes be eccentric and obnoxious, some of my Aries friends, but they also are the type that I can sort of always count on to be you know, I call them up or we get together and they're in the good mood and they love life and they want to have fun and, you know, they just want to do the work and do things and they're aggressive. They got that fiery aggressiveness about them. So I've always
My ascendant sign is Aries. I have that go get them at first, and then my overanalyzation tends to ruin that.
tends to come in and spoil the party. No, just kidding. But anyway, we're back to our topic. We're talking about alternative health. We're also talking about alternative, or what I titled on the show, Forbidden Technology, if that's still the title. And not to be too negative, even though it ended negative for Dr. Wilhelm Reich, but he did live an amazing life before his death in incarceration. And that's the important part to focus on, is that you have a scientist who's willing to, you know, sort of stick his neck out, and all of it privately funded, and still somebody has to have a problem with it. He harmed absolutely no one during his experiments. It was basically just testing for the ambient energy that ancient religions and ancient belief practices like the Vedic sages of India or Taoism and Buddhism believed in already. So he was basically along a similar line that I used to be on. I used to refer to myself as a spiritual scientist. I didn't used to throw the word pagan or witch or anything like that around. I just was interested in anything that was involving spirituality and combining it or uniting it with science. And I was always interested in those things. There used to be someone that would do a machine where they hook something up to your head. I think Kevin knows this. Monroe Institute has done some work with this, where
Yes. And
you get pulsations and it can help to promote out-of-body experiences.
Biofeedback
is
a part of that too.
Yeah, and I think these things are interesting, and they're not non-spiritual. To me, they are spiritual. What you're doing is you're just using science and admitting that spirituality and that the soul is part of science, and that this orgone energy or this ambient energy or this chi or mana or whatever you want to call it is part of science. And whereas Kevin says the psychic sphere, these things are part of our and should be a part of our scientific conversation, even if they're separate, even if you just go ahead and separate it and say, okay, we're going to put this in this category, but I still think it should be taken seriously because it is part of our experience and has even been scientifically proven and measured to some degree. Whether it's 100% all the claims everybody makes is up to future and should be up to future science, you know, and future scientists. But as far as actually having some proof of the energy that goes through us that makes up the soul, that makes up the spirit, the higher self, this proof is out there in some and in many forms. And notice the commonalities between all the different religions, or at least the mystery traditions, one might say, in dealing with it, you know, in paganism, in Buddhism, in Taoism, in Hinduism, and even in some ways Christianity, the way they deal with energy, the way they deal with spirit, the way they deal with divination sometimes, as we've discussed it before on the show. But to me, as an explorer, I think it's important to consider spirituality, to consider it as part of science, and not necessarily to separate it, but it's okay if you just put it in its own category. I'm at peace with that as well. With Kevin?
Yeah, I look at it like a pizza, really. There are some people who like white pizza with nothing on it whatsoever, just a little bit of glaze, all right? Then other people like it to be heavily laden. Some people like it as meat lover. Some people like it as vegetarian. But the thing is that we're all eating the same dish. We're achieving the same results. We're enjoying the moment through this dish that's prepared that's similar but not exactly the same. But we still are all getting the same experience. You know, where, like, look at the microscope, looking into the microscopic world, we would not have been able to do that had the microscope not been invented.
Right.
Here, the Monroe Institute machine might be a mechanism that is a lens, like the microscope, that can help us look into the microscopic world of the, you know, spiritual realm, the psychic sphere.
Which reminds me of, as I sent an email to Kevin, of a dream that I had that I shared, and it was a very, very, very powerful dream, and it felt completely 100% real while I was in it. And that was, I had a dream that I died, but it was kind of a peaceful death. In fact, in the dream, it wasn't revealed to me even till way later in the dream how I actually died. So I was just in this other place wondering what was going on. And it was like a busy bus station. We've discussed that image before, so I'm sure that's why it came up. And I'm in this bus station, and I hear people talking. And while I hear the people talking, that's how I figured out that I was in the sort of the in-between place in the afterlife. And I hear all these people talking. I'm like, oh, I died. Okay. So, because I hear people, like, some of them are freaking out. Some of them are accepting it, like, totally, and just going, okay, I'm going to move on. And they jump on the bus and go to their next life. So I'm at this sort of train station, bus station place. And I happen to notice that in this in-between place, though, was still a beautiful and thriving city. So I wanted to explore it. So I'm like, well, before I go on to the next life, I wanted to go, what's this place like? You know, so I go out and I go to the city, and in the dream I actually went to the club, you know, block, and like partied for a while, then woke up. When I woke up, there was this woman there, and she goes, hey, let's go get breakfast. And I had realized at that time when she started talking that she had been there the whole time, and I wasn't quite aware of that at first. She was like a spirit guide.
And I was going to ask you, did she have blonde hair?
She was blonde, yes.
Okay. My spirit guide also has blonde hair.
Yes, this woman definitely had blonde hair. And sort of dirty blonde, if I think correctly.
Okay.
Kind of like dirty blonde.
That's good.
And she was a spirit guide, and she was like, okay, let's go get some breakfast, because we were like partying for a week or whatever in the afterlife club zone. So we go, and she said, okay, and she points to this cafe and said, let's go to this cafe. I think there'll be something there you might want to see. So I go into this cafe, and we start. And it's all very mundane stuff. Like, none of this feels, like, really traumatic or dramatic after that. But what happens is the windows of the cafe, at first it's like the windows to the outside, like in real life, and then the windows become kind of a movie screen, and I see suddenly my death becomes a reality then. I see my brother, the Reverend Scott Samuel Michael, whom I rent an apartment from here, he's there at the scene of the death, not really mourning, like crying, like it almost was like some time had passed, but he wanted to figure out how I died. He's the type of person that likes to master things, and he was sitting there like walking around. Turned out I was hit by a car. That's how I died in the dream. And he's walking around this sort of turn circle where I was walking, and he's trying to figure out, well, if he had done this or that, or what happened? I mean, how did he, you know, how did this happen? And he's, since he's the type that likes to master things and be in charge, he's at stereotypical Leo almost, he was trying to figure out. And that was the part of the dream that got emotional, was watching him kind of stress out trying to figure this out. That was probably the only point in this afterlife dream that felt emotional, was watching him go through that. And he was just sitting there eating lunch, like after I had died, it was like a habit of his to go eat lunch at this site, which apparently was nearby where he works. Long story short, I then, after seeing that, of course, I become fully aware that I'm in an afterlife state, sort of a transition place. And that's what this place was. It was like therapy for those that die. Some spend thousands of years there. Some are there for 2 hours, they get it, and they go on the bus and go to the next life. So it's however long you needed to be there to work out your stuff. And so I just said, well, okay, I'm in an in-between place. This could be a weird opportunity. I'm not at my next life yet. So what I did, I said, I thought psychics. I'm like, can I contact somebody from here? And she said, yes, of course. There are people on Earth that can communicate with the afterlife, in-between place, psychic spheres, Kevin likes to call it. And so I said, I did say in the dream, I said, Kevin Baird, let me talk to my friend Kevin. And so she's like, okay, I'll take you to him. And at that point, the dream ended. But what I was thinking when I said that, I said I could help him develop a device so that people could always communicate. Since I'm on the other side, maybe since I'm here, I can help him develop an actual physical device to communicate with the other side. And then the dream basically ended at that point. She goes, sure, I'll take you to him. And that's kind of when I woke up and the dream dissipated. So I thought that that was an interesting dream and a take on how I think is a healthy way to view life and death. Since we're talking about alternative health, I think part of our alternative health series, of which today is like part one, and mentioning a device, a machine that not only could help cancer patients but change the weather, is also faith-based. So a belief in many lives, I think, is a less stressful way to look at life and death and can make you a healthier, less stressed-out person. I'm definitely a less stressed-out person during my years of believing in many lives. Now, talking about it's one thing, believing it's another, right? I mean, in my heart of... I don't want to say heart of hearts. What a terrible... in my deep as I can go in my soul, I do believe that we live on and we have many lives.
So you say that it was a full-on kind of dream? Like it had a tactile feel to it?
Oh, yeah. It was like touching things, eating things.
You could feel...
I could taste the food in the cafe.
The wind from people walking by you. You could feel the breeze on the air.
Absolutely.
Feel the atmosphere,
and
the
pressure.
And it
wasn't that stressful, and it was a dream about you died. And a lot of people of a belief system that doesn't believe in multiple lives, that could be a very stressful dream to them. But to me, it was very peaceful, very relaxed, almost mundane, except for the fact when I saw the scene with my brother trying to figure out how I died. That part, I got a little choked up then. And then after that, I was just, okay, what do I do now? Is there a block where in this city, this in-between city, where I can contact some psychics and help them? Then I became fascinated with what I could do with this place, you know, and from there. So maybe inventing a device or helping some psychic develop. I pictured almost like a radio, like people dialing in and talking to, hey, is that my aunt so-and-so that passed away, you know, 2 years ago?
They do have this device that uses AM radio amplitude modulation frequencies to allow us to communicate with ghosts as well. But the time that you sent me that email, I have been indeed researching a new device where it's basically a technology to where you can program your own kind of interface that collects like tactile, analog kind of information and translates it into computer language through this mechanism, and it's spelled Arduino or something like that. I'm not sure how you spell it. I just found it this week. Yeah. So you're right on with that.
So it, almost like the Jodie Foster thing, right, where she was listening to ambient white noise, thinking, wondering if there was secret communications in that movie Contact,
yes.
Which is, if you've never seen Contact, go see it. It's a beautiful movie. I love that movie.
And even in Poltergeist, when Carol Ann says they're here,
yeah.
And that she's looking at white noise on the TV screen,
yeah.
I believe they're connected.
Same concept. And I'm very audio-oriented, so... I could definitely, if I wanted to go in that direction, I could kind of sit there and listen to because I have been part of, at the Farnsworth Inn in Gettysburg, part of paranormal investigations there before, where we did electro-voice phenomenon. And we did get a couple voices, and one of the voices we got was one that was published in a book, so it was a repetitive voice that our little crew got with our lower level technology that someone else got. Right after we left, there was a very popular show at the time, I believe on the Discovery Channel perhaps, but there was another show that came in and they did, they brought in the serious equipment and the money and everything else. But we did our sort of a little bit low tech. I mean, we had half decent microphones. We set them up. They let us stay there for free. I stayed there for free with a friend that was into the EVP, electric voice phenomenon. And we did pick up a voice that was one that was recorded in a book before. So that was kind of interesting. We didn't pick up a lot, as many as we thought, but Gettysburg is considered to be one of the most haunted places in the United States of America. A lot of Civil War deaths and such. And it was a quaint little town, pretty cool place. Nice place to hang out for a weekend and do some ghost hunting, which used to be a hobby of mine when I was younger. And again, back then, I was less, I guess you could say, less religious. I was just sort of, I viewed myself more of a spiritual scientist. And being part of that ghost investigation was just an interesting experience that opened a lot of other doors. I actually met some interesting musical contacts and friends and even a girlfriend for a short time from doing that. So things happen, I think, when you start pursuing things you're passionate about. But that was the Farnsworth Inn. Patty O'Day, I believe, was her name, very Irish name, was the woman who ran that place. I believe that was her name. It was quite a few years ago.
As opposed to patio furniture, I guess.
Yes. Oh, did it. But
right.
We, in our research, we did pick up one voice that was sort of in just the best. I wish I could find it again. I got to contact my friend. His name was Tori, and he was in the military. He did four terms in Iraq. So he was over there four times. But he was a very efficient electro voice phenomenon guy. I mean, man, he would just sit there for hours and hours just listening. Back then it was cassette tapes, not digital, and he would just listen to these cassette tapes just for hours all night. And call me up at like 4 a.m. I found a voice. He was obsessed. and an eccentric human being.
He knows they're out there.
Yeah. There was one that was great. It almost seemed to take over the entire recorder. And I still remember what it said. We were all talking. There was no females there. And it was this dramatically loud female voice came in and said, "But I won't go into detail, but it was almost like she was answering a question that we were talking about, and it just came right in like, they often have a melodic tone to them, so it was like, "But I always," and it came in like sort of in and out melodically, and that was some fun times and some interesting experiences doing the ghost research back then, and to have some confirmation by some people that did it, you know, for the big money. and to have it a repeated voice that was in a book. That was kind of interesting as well. Same thing happened in Maryland. There was one, somebody wrote a local Maryland haunting book, and we had a voice in that place that was also turned up in a book. So sometimes these hauntings are just energy imprints, in my opinion. Sometimes they're actual entities, I think. And sometimes they're just, it's an imprint. It's just some leftover energy thing. I've even heard theories about how it can come out of wood and glass, and the energy can be there and just release, and all of a sudden you hear a voice or you see something and then it's gone. And it's all sorts of electrical storms.
It could be that it's, enabled by a bioelectric field that's emitted by somebody that's in the area.
Right. Some people are just
button pushers.
Yeah, just naturally energetic. And we drifted a bit off topic here. I apologize, but not too far, because we are talking about ambient energy, orgone energy, and how this energy can be used or manipulated to help you in your life, whether it's for healing or for manifestation, which I had a manifestation success, at least I view it that way, within this last week or so. And it was a pretty amazing thing to see a confirmation like that. And it's nice to know that you're just not talking about something, but it actually comes about. And that's how I did with this show. I've had other successes this year that were similar, and some of them almost too much, like be careful what you wish for, and I got it way too much. But again, as they say, have a clear vision. Be careful what you wish for and see it clearly. And speaking of a vision that apparently didn't work out, the World of Witches Museum is officially closed. It's closed down their doors. I thought that was a bit sad.
When did that happen?
I don't even know. I got the message from a girl who's going to join us in our Beltane ritual, Melissa, who's joined us for Ostara. And she told me, she sent me a message and saying that, yeah, she didn't have another ritual to do because Tituba Temple had closed down. And when she said that, I think I assumed that they just weren't doing anything in the temple. But actually, the entire thing was shut down. The store, the
last week,
the entire thing. So they'll regroup and the tradition will be fine. In fact, they'll probably have more money because having a brick-and-mortar place is a lot to pay for. And they'll probably be more successful, to be honest. I liked the idea that they had that location and that cool thing, you know, and it's in Salem, you know, the witch city. But things
well,
come to pass, you know, being
they closed
wide.
Down for renovation about a month ago. It was announced that it was closed last week.
Yeah, it was last week.
It was last week that it was officially closed.
Yeah, Brett. Yeah, Brett. Just let me know. It was last week that they officially closed their doors at the Water Witches Museum. I had never visited. Kevin actually was there. Kevin had visited that place before. I think he visited like just when it was in construction, didn't you?
Yeah, it was about 2 years ago.
Yeah,
that's the one that Don runs, right?
Yeah, Reverend Don Lewis. Yeah.
Bummer.
So he had health problems. He moved to Chicago. Back to Chicago. They
he
sent
moved back him. Home. Yeah.
Yeah. That's his home. He's Illinois native, and so they sent the stuff in multiple directions, different temples and stuff like that. And so the tradition will be, I think, it'll thrive perhaps better. Paying for that brick-and-mortar thing, when they did it, the whole time I felt like, how long are they going to keep this up? Even you felt that when you were there. Remember, you went there and went, how are these guys paying for this? I remember you mentioning that to me when you mentioned the trip that you went on.
Yep, it was amazing. Nice place. But nobody in it.
Yeah. And even just keeping up a little shop is a lot, you know, like sticks and stones. That's one of my dreams. That's one of the things I want to manifest in the near future. I would love to have a New Age shop. I had talked about it with Lily before, you know, when we talked both on and off air, of I want a shop like that, and I want it to also be like a coffee shop, and I want to encourage people to stay and stick around and have conversation like the one that I was accustomed to in Baltimore, Mythical Voyage, which is a great store. All right, folks, we are coming down to it now. I would like to thank everyone for joining us. It was a little bit chaos today, but we got to our topic, and we will continue on this topic on different days. We have guests coming up. One is an expert on Jewish Kabbalah. Her name is Dr. Zohara Hieronymus. Her husband has been on the History Channel as a consultant, as an expert on symbolic language. She's coming up April 25th, and she's an amazingly educated, I consider her a mentor, a great female mentor. And thank you, Kevin.
Thank you, thank you.
Thank you, Brett Hillman, for being here.
You are very welcome.
And as we close out, I would like to say again, I'm not saying that all these alternative technologies are the cure for this or that or anything. I just want to get the information out there, and I want people to make their own decisions for themselves. But people do, as the video said on YouTube, have a right to know. If I was suffering from something, I would want to know what the alternatives were. So we'll keep up with this on other episodes. Remember that the mysteries and possibilities of the universe are closer to Main Street than you may have ever imagined. Thank you. Peace and blessings.
Blessed be.